This is Charlotte Frascona. I'm interviewing Sally Probasco on October 21st, 2004, as part of the oral history of the Industrial Relations Research Institute. Sally, can you tell me something about your academic and professional background?
I have an undergraduate degree in the humanities, art, drama, and speech from Marietta College in Ohio. I received that in 1963. Then I went on to graduate school at UW-Madison and subsequently got a master's degree in rehabilitative recreation, and I received that in 1967. During that time, I began a professional career as a recreational therapist with emotionally disturbed adolescents at the Wisconsin Diagnostic Center, which was a high ratio of staff to patients. It was part of the state system, and I worked with adolescent males. I had that job for about 2.5 years. And at that point, I switched to working with students on the UW-Madison campus for the first couple of years, and this would have been in the late 60s. I worked in student affairs as a volunteer coordinator, as a liaison with Peace Corps and VISTA. I worked in the Dean's Office for Student Affairs for publications. We created the dial system, which was a telephone system that gave general campus information to students. I wrote and edited a newsletter for the student affairs population of staff, and then also later for LNS staff and faculty. Then I became an academic advisor, first for graduate students in the English department. That was probably 1980 to, no, that must have been 19. I'm blanking on the years, but that was approximately, as I recall, about 10 years. So that may have been 1970 to 80. Then I became an academic advisor in industrial relations, and that's when, of course, I worked at the Institute with graduate students, both master's and PhD students, getting degrees in industrial relations, and some people getting joint degrees in law and IR. It was a fabulous time. I worked there until 1991. In my latter years at the Institute, and again, I don't even remember what my title was, but I assumed a title of academic advisor. I also was able to go to law school half-time on the extended timetable. I had tremendous support from my coworkers as well as my bosses, who were faculty, to allow me to do that. Either a late afternoon seminar or an evening class when, of course, I wouldn't be working at the Institute. I ended up also during my time at the Institute sitting in on all the courses that the master's students took as part of their IR coursework, and that was tremendously fun, sort of getting a look at coursework that I wasn't schooled in: economics, labor law, research methods, to get a sense of what they were doing. After I finished my law degree, which was in 1991, I left the Institute and became an assistant city attorney for the city of Madison, a job I thoroughly enjoyed. I was, for the first couple years, a prosecutor for the city for civil ordinance violations, underage drinking, drunk driving, trespass, health code, fire code violations. The next 4 years I was lead prosecutor of the city, and in the last 5 or 6 years I did legal advising for the Parks Department, our housing authority, Monona Terrace, Streets, a bunch of different agencies. I retired at the age of 62 in February of 2004, a few months ago. And since that time, I've been returning to my undergraduate love, which was painting. And I've been doing watercolors and oils. I also, for the last 4 years of my professional life and into retirement, have been the citizen member of the LNS Committee on Human Subjects, where we review research for half of the campus, largely in the social sciences, but in other fields also, to verify that the use of human subjects in those research projects is according to federal guidelines, and that the human subjects are protected and kept at low risk while furthering the research of those faculty members. What I plan to do shortly is also begin pro bono work, doing legal work for the elderly on an unpaid basis.
A very rich and varied background. In terms of your association with the Institute, did your work change over the 11 years you were here?
Somewhat. It always changes depending on who's director, and that was a huge influence on the Institute as it evolved. And also, as you gain experience in any job, sometimes the job evolves with certain needs. I was hired by Jim Stern, who was a wonderful boss. And I found very quickly that I became more independent. Each time I would have a new director, I mean, just like in any job, you would need to follow that person's direction to the point where they trusted you, they let you have a lot more independence, they knew that you had the needs of the Institute first and foremost, that you were an a dependable employee. I don't know that it changed remarkably as far as my contact with students. I always loved working with students from the very beginning. I worked with both master's students and PhD students, as well as students in a joint degree program in law and IR. You know, and my recollection is that from the very beginning also, I did grant writing. I did not only career advising, but had a close liaison with business placement as well as LNS placement. So a part of my job was securing positions for students, encouraging companies and unions to come on campus and interview. And as I recall, I did that throughout my 11 years. So I don't recall that was different. One thing that was interesting was at the point where I was appointed, right at that point, my understanding is my position had been changed. Prior to my being hired, my position did a lot more budget work, a lot more financial work, and I think the decision was made before I was hired to split those jobs into two positions so that, unlike my predecessor, I was totally involved with students all the time. I had office hours, I saw them all the time. I was very heavily involved in counseling them academically, as well as job hunting for them, getting them financial aid. I worked all the time with the graduate school. So even though times would change as each new director would come in, my recollection is that once that decision had been made administratively, I was doing many of the same things throughout the time I was here. And it wouldn't surprise me if at the point when I left and a new person came in, they may have restructured and the person who succeeded me might have done something different.
My experience having worked with a number of different directors is that if you've been here for a while and they've just started their 3-year term, you know as much as they do, or maybe more, about the day-to-day functioning of the Institute. And so there are many ways in which they rely on you for making decisions. And
I think that's very natural. I mean, faculty are here to teach and to do research. They're not here primarily to do hand-holding, academic advising, learning the very specific particulars of graduate school rules, financial aid deadlines, that type of thing. I mean, that's why you have academic staff. And that's very true. I mean, Stern was very experienced. So when I came in, you know, he was teaching me to some extent. But because I had been on campus and working with graduate students prior, a lot of that kind of stuff I actually did know, but I didn't know industrial relations. So he was a tremendous help, substantively. But it's true after that, when Craig Olson came in, Dick Miller, Lee Hansen, to some extent, they relied on you to explain to them background. But on the other hand, they brought a lot of expertise on individual faculty, on making committee appointments, although we would sit down together and decide who would be best on committee appointments. I mean, one thing I took on as we were hiring faculty to have joint appointments, we actually eventually got a tenure track line. I would take on the role of welcoming recruits that we had to campus, helping spouses do job hunting, the types of things that probably weren't in my job description, but were sort of a natural kind of thing because I was very familiar with the Institute. I was familiar with Madison, and I was more than happy to do that type of thing. But you're right. The more experienced you became, they were more willing to let you take on things. I mean, that's why they let me go to law school. I had been here quite a while at that point, and they knew I would still be totally devoted to the Institute.
And they knew you could manage the job. So the directors you worked with were Jim Stern, then Craig Olson, then Dick Miller, and then Lee Hansen?
Right, and I don't recall whether Paula had come in by the time I left. I think Dick was here. Or maybe Lee. You know, honest to God, it's like a huge blend. I believe that was after I left, because I left in 91.
When you started here in 1980, there was a TAA strike, and a lot of the IR students were heavily involved in it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. In 1980, that makes me think that I must have started in the fall. And as I recall, now that I think of it, I started a week before registration. And so I had to do the academic advising for graduate students in a program I was totally unfamiliar with. So now it is flooding back to me. That was an incredible challenge, like trying to get them in the right courses and not just learning there.
And the strike had been the previous
spring.
April.
I think it had settled in the spring. So I was in another academic department on campus, English, that was very heavily, as you know, involved in the strike and went out 95% of the strike. So I am familiar with the strike on campus, but I wasn't in industrial relations, although there were a lot of after effects of that when I started. Yeah. Dave Hecker, who had been, I don't know if he was president of the union, but very prominent in the TAA, was one of our students. And the woman whose name I'm blanking on was also very heavily involved. And I had a friendly relationship with them. And that was one of the incredibly interesting things to me about industrial relations. And we had people, the stereotypes of IBM human resources person and very, very committed labor negotiator and everything in between. And it was a fascinating student body. And people obviously were still, I don't know whether polarized is fair, but the aftermath of that strike and how hard it was on students, as well as faculty, but particularly graduate students, was very much evident when I came here.
Was there a split in the faculty?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I only heard about it. I knew there was a split in the faculty in English, but not as much. Here there was a faculty and students simply would talk about that, and we're still recovering. And I recall from English, I mean, careers were, ruined is probably harsh, but careers were changed forever after that strike. You had many PhD students who had been in the process of, you know, writing dissertations that never finished. And it's probably presumptuous of me to say because of the strike, but there was such a rift in general between students and some faculty. I mean, major professors, anyone who's familiar with a graduate program knows that you live and die with your major professor and their facilitation. And not to take responsibility away from the students, they made their choices, but it was a very difficult and stressful time coming out of that strike. I mean, it was a very polarizing, difficult situation.
I would think that in English it was difficult, and I was there, so I remember that. But there was a love for literature that and a desire to work in academia that people had apart from their whatever side they fell on with regard to the strike. But in this program, what they were studying was exactly what the strike was about, and so it seems like it would have intensified here.
Yes and no. It was intensified, yes, but that's their meat and potatoes. It's like a living example of what, you know, if you're a labor person, what you strive for and what you have to go on, and invaluable experience for those people that are going to go on and advise labor unions. So I think in some ways, I think for English, and it is stereotypical, it was disenchanting for a lot of people. I think in IR, it was sort of the living embodiment of, you know, this is where we are. And I think probably personal rifts existed, but people went on because this is what they were meant to do. And you may have had people fall out of, okay, I can't get a job in labor, I don't want to go through this. And they had another course to follow, you know, whether it was in public sector or more likely in private sector, in a human resource. And you saw people make those types of switches. But it, for the most part, you know, they're living what they were, think that they wanted to do. And also there were jobs.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference than in the humanities, where jobs were very tight. And IR, that's been, and I don't have the recent experience, but during the time I was here, there were jobs, and that's one of the main things I did, was hustle jobs for people.
Yeah. What do you see, or what did you see, as the greatest strengths of the Institute?
Oh, the diversity. I just, what a place. The diversity was so fabulous, among students as well as faculty. You know, sometimes when you're in a traditional department, you know, there may or may not be a whole lot of choice. Here, we were pulling people in, at least in the political spectrum, all from every point on that political perspective, continuum. And so you would have a lot of choice as far as who people you studied with, whether you did independent research or, you know, your master's project or whatever. And I guess I found that, as sort of a bystander, because it wasn't my field, really, really fascinating. And that meant among the student body, you had, you know, people to choose from, such different people. I mean, as I described, and people that come in like overalls, actually, literally, we had one guy come to recruit on campus, and he was wearing overalls. A labor guy, grant you, and then two three-piece suits, IBM, pinstriped. I mean, and everything in between. So, to me, that was the really richness. And it meant when we were recruiting faculty, the diversity of their research was just completely fascinating. I mean, I was here when we recruited Joel Rogers. Mm. I mean, and like top people in their field. It was just, to me, that's really the huge strength of the Institute, both in faculty and students.
Aside from the diversity among political perspectives, was there diversity in terms of race, ethnic background, gender?
Some. We certainly got a lot of international students, and that brought certainly different races into the program. We were very successful in the Advanced Opportunity Fellowship Program, and that certainly, I assume it still exists, I don't even know, but it obviously is a scholarship program to recruit minority students, and so that certainly brought minority students into the program. The Law IR program had a diversity into it. We did have older students. One of the students that we recruited for that had been a Teamster for 15 years and came from the West Coast, as I recall. So, and it was obviously much older. So, both in race, we had many women in the program, in gender, and then in age, we had a diversity. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it is certainly an enriching element for the student body to have that kind of exposure to people. And this kind of field, you know, experience in the field, wherever it happens to be, was an advantage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always, whenever I would talk to prospective students, I would always encourage them to, you know, working is a great thing to do before you come, certainly to this field. I think it is in general just for graduate school, for maturity and motivation, but certainly for this field, a huge advantage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did the students change in the 11 years you were here? Were there more or fewer people going into labor or HR?
As I recall, probably there was some slight decline in people going into labor. Mm-hmm. That's probably true. Although we had quite a few people in labor during the time I was here. But as I recall, toward by 91, that may have declined some. Mm-hmm. And certainly labor unions were suffering at that point, and you had probably a diminished number of faculty also in labor unions. I mean, just in general, as I recall, the people that economics was hiring, they weren't hiring labor economists at that point. Although the senior labor economists we had in the program, Jim Stern, Lee Hansen, and others, you know, was a huge strength of our program.
What were the weaknesses of the program?
I don't know if I'd call it a weakness, but I think a struggle was getting recognition from Letters and Science that this was a legitimate field and giving us a tenure track position. We had to fight tooth and nail to get that kind of recognition and to get the budget support. I think another difficulty when you have an interdisciplinary program like this, it rises and falls in who you have as director and your core people. I mean, they have to fight for this and witness its ending. I mean, I don't want to judge. I'm not here. I haven't been here for a number of years, you know, 13 years, but that's how it's a constant struggle to fight for budget and for the authority to hire, because you're not a traditional, you know, academic department. That's the difficulty.
Do you think that the struggles you just mentioned account for the gradual decline of the Institute? That there, or were there other factors?
I don't know if there are other factors, perhaps. I mean, we were in good shape when I left in 91. I mean, we were considered one of the top programs in the country. But it was I mean, I hustled during the whole time I was here. I went to dinners with recruiters all the time and off hours. I was hustling for financial aid. But that was just sort of part of the job. I mean, the academic advising, it's not a breeze, but I love that. I mean, that's just sort of a natural part of the job, getting to know kids.
Yeah.
Figuring out what's going on in their lives and trying to help them make good choices and be supportive and so forth. But hustling for jobs and money was the more challenging part, at least of my job. Now, what ultimately goes to a decline? I mean, you'd probably have to look at really more broad factors. The economy has gone into decline, although during the Clinton years in the 90s, in general, things were good, but how they were in campus, I haven't the vaguest notion because I wasn't here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm probably not a good source for other types of things. I mean, so much in the Institute came down to 5 or 6, 10 core faculty who you have to have that kind of nucleus that are committed to the Institute, because typically the other tenure track department held control. Mm-hmm. So you have to have faculty that are totally committed to the Institute. First and foremost, they're going to fight for it, fight to recruit the best students. I mean, it's a package deal for us to stay on top.
And getting the best students is difficult if without the funding.
Oh yeah, you have to have funding, and you're competing with other top schools.
Yeah, my experience is that we would often get wonderful students who would go to Illinois or go to Cornell because they could get a free ride at those schools. And Wisconsin was not giving out PAs, project assistantships, to students. And since there's no undergrad program, there were no courses for TAs to teach. And it was very difficult to find funding.
Oh no, I would try to get TAs in other departments.
Yeah.
And you have to have faculty that are getting research money that are able to hire PAs. But no, that was always a big hustle. I spent a lot of time on fellowship application so we could get the most we could get in tuition waivers and both incoming fellowships as well as dissertative fellowships. I mean, it's all part of the mix.
Yeah.
But I mean, really pushing to get PA ships. I would recruit in the community to get project assistantships through government. We would get project assistantships there, or Mass and Teachers would give us a half-time project assistant. AFSCME gave us a project assistantship. I mean, you were always trying to get whatever source of funding you could get to help kids get through. It's expensive.
Yeah. Are you familiar at all with what happened in the past couple of years that led to the closing of the Institute?
No.
Oh, okay. Because my question was going to be, what do you think might have been done to preserve it?
I just don't have the familiarity. I mean, I feel like really presumptuous in starting to sort of expand. I don't know. I have no idea.
But the struggles you mentioned, not having recognition as a legitimate discipline and not having departmental status, which would have meant tenure granting authority, continued to be
totally huge
problems.
And you have to have very big names of faculty that LNS will listen to and say, we really don't want to lose this person, and a part of their deal is they're going to head the Institute and be willing. Who is the German guy we had?
Wolfgang Streich.
Yeah, I mean, if he had been director, I mean, you have to have him, Joel Rogers, people of that caliber that have so much authority and pull and are willing to put their careers in keeping them here on the line, and then some.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how I know Phil Certain, nice guy, perhaps a wonderful dean, I have no idea. There are a lot of pressures at that level, too, but it seems to me you at least need that. Yeah. People of that stature that are willing to, you know, fight tooth and nail and say, we are number two in the country, and you have to.
Yeah.
If you don't have it, you're not going to get it. This is always a vulnerable type of program. It always has been.
any sort of interdisciplinary program is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned that econ was not hiring labor economists, they were hiring different sorts of economists.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that when the labor economists retired, those folks were not replaced.
Right, Glenn Kane, Jim Stern, Lee Hans, those people, that's not where that field was going. Yeah. So they weren't replaced, and you were getting, and we were constantly reaching out to new faculty in, you know, even women's studies, I mean, wherever we could find them. Psych really was not producing in that field, at least on this campus, was not pulling in the kind of people that would want joint appointments with IRE or were other schools.
Yeah, people who did organizational psychology, industrial psychology.
They just weren't, the research wasn't going that direction, at least on this campus in the psych department. That was a loss.
Yeah.
We certainly had graduate students coming in, a ton of them with psych background, that would have been interested in industrial psychology, I mean, that type of area, and we didn't have them to pull in. But we were constantly looking at new faculty coming in and trying to woo them, if not to have a joint appointment here, certainly an affiliation here. People in history, policy.
Okay. My sense now is that the issues are not so much big labor versus big management as they were in the 1940s when this place got started, but more international issues, given the globalization of the economy and of corporations. It's very important to study other cultures, other languages, there's so much outsourcing being done, and the employment relationship continues to be significant, but it's really, and people need to take an international perspective.
It's so interesting to hear that. You know, it's interesting to me because we had so many students come in my time, 80 to 91, that had a strong interest, but the international field was somewhat narrow. And we had Caslow, Everett Caslow, and Saul Levine. And then we had Wolfgang Streck, and we had some others come in, but that was a fairly narrow field. I mean, and we still required an international course. But for instance, if someone wanted to go in the human resources field, companies traditionally were not hiring directly in an international area. People had to get much more experience in a working situation for a number of years before they could ever hope to go into an international area. So it's interesting that there's been more focus. But as I recall, at the time, the Saul Levines and the Everett Caslows were also not replaced when they retired. And so, that's so fascinating. Wow.
Jonathan Zeitlin is the only professor who's in L&S who's continued to be closely connected
Zeitlin,
to the institute.
I think, had started here right before I left.
Yeah. And he focuses on the international area, and with two exceptions, all of the PhD students are interested in international industrial relations.
That's fascinating.
But nobody else in L&S has stayed connected. All the people who have been interested in the institute are either in the School for Workers or the business school. And so
you have those students without major professors. You need multiple people to satisfy.
And one of the reasons, or one of the rationales for closing down the institute, was that there weren't enough L&S faculty who were committed to it.
Wow.
And
what a loss.
I'm wondering if people just have the sense that they can do whatever research needs to be done in their home department under the umbrella of their own tenure granting department, and don't need the interdisciplinary network that IR provides in order for them to do what they want to do.
Well, there's always been, I assume there still is, that special committee degree. I mean, that's traditionally how people do, but the whole point is it's not institutionalized. It is, to the extent that there's a mechanism, but you know, you as the student have to be so much more more motivated and
right.
disciplined to reach out and try to convince faculty and other departments to give you their time and their expertise.
But in terms of the faculty too, in terms of faculty research,
yeah,
there didn't seem to be a sense on the part of LNS faculty that this place was necessary for them to continue doing the research they wanted to do.
And again, to me, that comes down to you'd have to have several very powerful faculty who say that's not enough. It really must be together in an organized body to make this happen. It's such an important field. This is the way things are going, and we must not have had that.
Right.
I mean, exactly. I hate to say, I assume we didn't have that.
No, we didn't. We didn't.
And the people that still felt committed are like 80, you know, 75, 70, you know.
They're emeritus faculty,
right.
Or they're people outside of LNS.
Right.
And so.
What a loss. I mean, I'm saying the obvious.
The deans in LNS said, fine. You can take IR.
Yeah, sure.
But,
you fund it. Yeah, it's
but
money.
You fund it.
Yeah, you fund it. I mean, you find that in government. You find that everywhere. Fine,
yeah.
You fund it.
Yeah.
Great idea. Find the money.
Yeah. And none of the other places that were obvious homes for the Institute
were willing to business.
And
they were quite a strength by 91.
Yeah.
Business, you know, Granger hadn't been built yet, but
yeah.
they were going to move into Granger. Huh.
Yeah. There was a proposal to move the Institute to the business school. Business school was ready to take it on, but they wanted some money.
Oh, of course.
And
of course they did. No, right, yeah. That's just sad. That's very sad. I mean, you know, and as usual, and this was so typical, students are caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You have two faculty fighting, and this is a graduate student that gets caught in the middle.
Right.
And so, I mean, I can remember seeing the photographs of those kids in IR t-shirts at the Regents meeting, you know, sold down the river, no chance in hell, but they're trying.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. We have two master's students left who didn't finish in May. And they're taking courses part-time and will be finishing up soon, but they don't need IR courses. They can do courses in other departments. And we've got about, I think, 11 PhD students who are finishing up under the rubric of sociology.
Mm.
So they're being treated as soc grad students.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
You know, that means they have to have sort of an extra measure of discipline and motivation to get through, and hopefully people will hire them.
Right.
Yeah. Like everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
What a shame.
It sounds like you have warm feelings for this place.
Oh my God, yes. I mean, it's interesting. I wondered if I would really remember anything to be able to say. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, the students, I mean, I had a student die here, several students, I hate to go on a sad note, but committed suicide, and so I helped their families. I mean, it was such a wonderful place and such a nurturing place, and the directors, all very different. I have very fond recollections of giving their time and energy, again, sort of above and beyond the call of duty. And that's why I feel like I've been somewhat negative about, you know, core people not being here. But to be in the Institute, you had to have, as a faculty member, an extra measure of commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had to fight your own home department. It wouldn't surprise me if in many of those more pure academic departments, these people weren't sort of somewhat looked down upon as, you know, what is this delusion that you have, industrial relations. The students were fabulous.
Mm.
I mean, as for me, I mean, you don't do this type of job without having wonderful feelings for students. Fascinating people, tough times, working their way through many of them, fascinating fields. Anytime we would have a reunion, that was the joy, really, of seeing the students come back, you know, with their kids, with their photographs, with their job stories, you know, wherever they were. Was a wonderful, wonderful job. And I feel very appreciative of how supportive they were for me as a person. And can you imagine, I mean, allowing me to go to law school half-time while I'm working full-time and being tremendously supportive. And that was tough to do. I can remember my first year, I think Lee Hansen was my director then. He was like, I'm breaking down or something because it was so stressful. He was like there for me. Mm. What can we do? Can we reduce your appointment to make it easier? I mean, he was just fabulous, as everyone was. I mean, yeah. I got Jim Jones, who had the office next to me, is the one that found the job description for me in the city attorney's office and said, Sally, you need to apply for this. Huh. Was a recommendation for me when I got that job.
Huh.
I mean, people were fabulous to me. I loved it.
Which staff did you work with?
Gosh, well, I remember. Well, Marcia Stanek and Sandra Englesby, I still see for lunch. We still have lunch, and none of us have been affiliated with IR for a long time, but we still sort of go over the woes and the successes of IR and reminisce about students and faculty. I remember Sandra and Marcia the most. Chris Coppins was an admissions assistant. Diane Platzowitz is still in LNS. Wonderful, wonderful person. I could tell a story on Diane, but I won't for the tape. I'm trying to think who else. Christine, I can't remember her last name. We had wonderful student assistants. Julie Ringelstetter was a student assistant. Fabulous, wonderful person. Maggie Sullivan preceded me, and I was always told did a wonderful job here. And I've seen Maggie from time to time, a really, really nice person. Sue, whose last name I don't remember, and I didn't work together, but she succeeded Sandra, I believe.
Sue, yes.
Yeah, very nice person. I'm trying to think who else was here. No other names come to mind, but I don't recall having anyone here that I didn't get along with and wasn't really great to work with. I mean, that was another thing about the Institute. I mean, we all loved it. Loyal, loved the students. I mean, pride into their lives. God, I mean, had food and cookies out on the counter all the time. It was a wonderful, wonderful place to work. And the staff becomes close with students again because you have faculty that have half-time appointments. Even your director was here really half-time because they had other obligations. You know, they're teaching, they're doing research, they're off in their home department some of the time. So you are the network for the students, so you become very, very close. We had students with offices right across the hall, around the corner. I almost forgot Barbara and Signe. I mean, we had the publications director, which was another staff position, and they were totally great. Jan Levine Fall was here. I mean, I remember those other staff people. So it was very close-knit and wonderful.
Well, also, you were here advising students in the days before email, so there was a lot more face-to-face contact.
There was only face-to-face contact. And you're right, that would have made a tremendous difference. I mean, we had computers in our offices. That was the big deal. You know, we each had a computer. And I can remember actually going to the city attorney's office, and I, who was like minimally competent on the computer, was considered major whiz in the city attorney's office because I was familiar with DOS, if you can believe it. So, yeah.
Any final words of wisdom or final comments about your years here?
It was one of the best jobs I ever had. I will never forget the people and how kind everyone was and how wonderful, particularly the students. I mean, I always have the greatest fond memories of the students. And I'm terribly sad the Institute is ending, but I'm really hoping that the network of alumni still will be strong. I mean, that's one thing we did start when I was here, was the Alumni Association, to reach out and help kids along the way. But no, it was nothing more than a fabulous experience, and I miss those people.
Thank you.
Thank you.